You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Good morning, friend. Welcome in hour two of the Mike Allen Show on this Friday, December 9th. Thank God it's Friday. We've got a little kiss of winter on the ground this morning here in central Kentucky, where we broadcast from our beautiful palatial studios at 110 Dennis Drive in Lexington. Little kiss of winter, little kiss of snow, which it's not really a welcome advance as far as I'm concerned. No consent here. I'd prefer it stay summer, but I guess one way to look at it, if it's going to be cold, it may as well snow. My pleasure to be with you. I talked earlier in the week about the film Arrival, the Amy Adams movie, an extraterrestrial encounter film that I happened to see after reading some of the reviews, particularly from sometimes show guest Alyssa Wilkinson. Really piqued my interest, and I went to see it this past weekend and was not disappointed. I think it's one of the most profound and important films that I've ever seen. And I don't think I'm prone, as I can be at times, to sort of the tyranny of the moment. I mean, this movie, I think, is going to wear very well. And Father Damien Ferentz, who is a priest from the Diocese of Cleveland, who's been a guest on the show and I'm social media friends with, when I made a comment about the film online on my Facebook page, I think, or maybe it was Twitter, he commented that William Price III, that he knows and that I've actually met once, but not social media friends with, William Price III, who's a filmmaker and a storyteller. He also happens to be married to Audrey Assad, who's been on my program before, the Catholic musician, singer, songwriter. Anyway, that William particularly loved Arrival and would love to talk about it. So I thought, hey, let's get him on the program. So I had a conversation with him yesterday about the film Arrival, and that's going to comprise most of this second hour. I'll give you a heads up, and we will give you a heads up in the conversation as well when we're drifting from talking in generalities to spoiler alerts, because there are there are reveals, twists in the film that really add to its power. And so if you've not seen the film and you don't want those things spoiled for you, then when you get the spoiler alert, pay attention to it. But, you know, have no fear, because I think even if you get some reveals, there are things that you're not going to really understand about the film until you see it. And there are profound things, I think, Catholic sort of themes and undercurrents, even though they may not have been intended, because Catholicism, there's a universality to truth and the human hunger for truth. It only makes sense. So anyway, look forward to that conversation with William Price a little bit later. We'll also talk maybe a little bit more about what Pope Benedict had to say about aging, why it gets easier and harder. And we will also spend the Dalek Catechism wheel. And like I said, I'm asking a question of the day. What do you like most about your current age? What do you like least about your current age? 573-4BREAD-4. You can call or text, or you can email me, mikeallenshow@gmail.com, or post a response on Facebook or on Twitter, which is what Shannon did. She chimed in, 40 is a strange place. I'm wiser than I was, but not old enough or even wise enough to let things go. I don't like how things are slowing down internally. Having 6 kids, 3 of whom are 5 and under, requires lots of energy. Yes. No doubt. Yeah, we had our youngest daughter, my wife and I, both aged 39, and oftentimes joke that she's being raised like a grandchild. She's the smallest on the lowest on the totem pole, and so yes, she probably gets more privileges than our oldest did, no doubt. Our oldest never tires of pointing out. Our 24-year-old. So, got you there, Shannon. I feel you. Anyway, so chime in if you want. 573-4BREAD-4. Email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. www.redbox.com. Like I said, inspired by this question with an article here by David Mills referring to Pope Emeritus Benedict's last book called The Last Testament. It's a book-length interview, I think, with the journalist Peter Sewald, who has interviewed the Holy Father Emeritus before. And David Mills picks up on, I guess, a strain of their conversation in terms of why, whether things get easier or get harder the older you get. And Pope Benedict Emeritus says basically the answer is both. He says, you know, in some sense it's easier because you're more practiced. I guess assuming you've been seeking to groove your soul toward virtue, assumedly, should come a little easier when you get older, as well as some spiritual habits. But he said that the thing, and I thought this was a wonderfully honest thing from Joseph Ratzinger. He said, one feels the difficulty of life's questions more deeply. And not just, you know, the sort of individual existential questions about the meaning of life. As Ratzinger wrote, gosh, more than 40 years ago, in what I think is one of his great works, the book Introduction to Christianity, he talks about how there's no human person who's ever free from questions and ever free from doubts this side of the veil. That means whether you're an ardent believer or whether you're an atheist, there's still that little what if hanging over you that you can't fully escape. And obviously he feels that even more keenly, and he's not afraid to admit that and to talk about it, which I think, again, shatters the caricature of the straw man of Pope Benedict Emeritus as this sort of rigid moralist. There is a mercy and an understanding of life's complexities as well in terms of dealing with other people that happened. Not a welshing on the truth, don't get me wrong, but an understanding that that the world is a complicated place. But on the positive, Pope Benedict Emeritus says, while we may feel the difficulty of life's questions more deeply, he says, we also find the greatness of Jesus Christ's words. Jesus is always great and full of mystery. The depths of the word are never fully plumbed. And he gives examples from his own life. He said, I now find many statements from the Gospels more challenging in their greatness and gravity than I did before. Some words of wrath, of rejection, of the threat of judgment certainly become more mysterious and grave and awesome than before. Even in old age, he adds, the truth comes close to you as something completely new. So that's pretty cool. And I hope it's not his last testament. I hope he's wrong about that. I don't think infallibility transfers over to those kind of things. So I hope there's more from, particularly on his experience of being an older man, an old man, and his faith. Because we need you to lead us, Pope Benedict, into this. Just as John Paul II led us through his witness to have no fear of suffering. In some ways, you know, we have fears of old age and what it might do. So I need to get a hold of this book, The Last Testament, and check it out. That's for sure. Today's readings, checking them out for just a minute. You have Isaiah 48. Thus says the Lord, your Redeemer, the Holy One of Israel. I, the Lord, your God, teach you what is for your good, and lead you on the way you should go. If you would hearken to my commandments, your prosperity would be like a river, and your vindication like the waves of the sea. In other words, it's simply, you know, this is that whole question of who do you place priority on, future you or present you? If we understood that the choices we make now will impact whether or not we walk in the path of life and discover goodness and virtue. This is the question of life. And we are invited during this Advent season, this new liturgical year, I think, to refocus again on what really matters in the long term. And then the gospel reading, Jesus expressing really his frustration at the people who he could never please. And there are those people out there, right? We may even be those persons. To what shall I compare this generation? It is like children who sit in the marketplaces and call to one another. We played the flute for you, but you did not dance. We sang a dirge, but you did not mourn. And our Lord says, for John came neither eating nor drinking, and they said, he is possessed by a demon. The Son of Man came eating and drinking, and they said, look, he's a glutton and drunkard, a friend of tax collectors and sinners. But wisdom is vindicated by her works. There's no pleasing people, as they say. We have to really check our hearts. It's so easy to go negative. Yesterday I was at the barber shop. I go to see this barber who's cut my hair since I was 13, believe it or not. He's about 8-9 years older than me, fresh out of barber school when he started. I go about once a year. Usually my wife cuts my hair, but I like to check in with him, and he shapes up anything that may be gotten askew with my hair, my very complicated hairstyle. It's a joke. Anyway, I'm sitting in the barber's. We were talking about Kentucky basketball, how much fun it is with John Calipari, all the winning. And here was an old curmudgeon sitting in the barber chair next to us going, yeah, well, you know what? I like championships. I'm like, brother, he's won a championship. We've been in the Final Four 4 times in 7 years. Well, what in the world? So I was talking to another friend later. It's just this incessant part of ourselves. We go negative. It's so much easier to go negative. Well, let Advent, let that rose candle Sunday be a reminder that there's reason for hope. There's reason to open ourselves up to the goodness of God, his love and mercy, the good he wants for us. That's the voice of the devil, man. Negative. We're so taken in by that. I am, I know. Mea culpa. So anyway, we'll be back. We'll talk to William Price III about the film Arrival. This is the Mike Allen Show.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Into the Mike Allen Show, 15 minutes past the hour. I had the chance yesterday to talk to William Price III, who is a screenwriter and filmmaker, a big fan like me of the movie Arrival, starring Amy Adams. He is the president of Fortunate Fall Records and Whiskey Ginger, Please. And I'll tell you more about him in the next segment. But we were able to catch up yesterday and have a conversation about the film Arrival. Listen in. Hello, William.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing great. So I was really excited that you were recommended, of course, this conversation. Father Damien Ference, mutual friend, said you were itching to talk about the film Arrival. I saw it. I've been talking about it with those I saw it with and kind of briefly touching mm-hmm. it on the radio. I loved the movie, but I'd really be interested in your perspective as a filmmaker. Tell us first a little bit about your experience in film and what you do.
Sure, yeah. Love Father Damien. I actually was texting him pretty regularly to see this movie. I wanted to hear his thoughts about it. So I'm excited to have his recommendation. I live in Nashville, Tennessee, and about 15 years ago, I started working in film. Actually kind of got my start with Life Teen International down in Phoenix. They started teaching me the ropes years ago. And over the last 15 years or so, I've worked in all different facets of filmmaking, mostly short films, commercials, music videos. I haven't had the opportunity to work on a feature film. But it's been sort of an important part of my life for a long time. I remember seeing a movie in my sophomore year of high school that really spoke to my life and sort of woke me up to the idea of storytelling being a genuine art form, not just something that is meant to give us passive entertainment. Spoke to my life and really impacted me emotionally. And ever since, I've sort of been on a journey to try and engage with stories and tell stories that speak to the universal human experience, that speak to beauty and the suffering that we all have in common as human beings. And I think film is just such a, has the potential at least to be such a rich and lush format to delve into the human experience. That's where I'm coming from. Yeah, I'm not a critic. I'm a fan of movies, you know, and a maker of them. So.
Absolutely. I mean, well, and to be fair, you know, I know several critics also love the film in this case. So that's a good thing. Let me just give a quick synopsis for those who haven't seen it. And I'm pulling this off the line, off the internet here. Linguistics professor Louise Banks, played by Amy Adams, who almost seems ubiquitous, by the way, she's in a lot of movies, leads an elite team of investigators when giant spaceships touch down in 12 locations around the world as nations teeter on the verge of a global war. Banks and her crew must race against time to find a way to communicate with the extraterrestrial visitors. Hoping to unravel the mystery, she takes a chance that could threaten her life and quite possibly all of mankind. Dunna! In a world. You know, that's kind of... you know, when I first saw the trailers, I thought, reminded me of Contact. I don't know if you saw that film back in 1997 with Jodie Foster. I think it's a better film than Contact, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think I see the similarities. It wasn't one that came to mind for me, but I would have to agree. It is, I think, a stronger story and a better made film for sure. I think it offers a lot more. I thought personally that Contact went on for quite a long time and left wanting at the end, you know. And for me, Arrival is a film that I've seen twice now, and there's not a wasted moment. And it is the payoff of the film is it's pretty incredibly emotionally engaged and really worth the price of admission for sure.
We're here with William Price. We're talking about the film Arrival, and at least at this portion of our conversation, we're going to be spoiler free. So we'll give you the heads up whenever we're going to, because there are some serious twists and reveals in the film that you definitely don't want to know about. You want to let it unfold as a good film should. Amy Adams, I think, an excellent actress. I mean, she's one of these persons who really becomes the character, and you kind of forget, in a sense, her own presence in the film. You know, she just becomes the one she portrays.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I think she was a great addition to the movie. I thought Jeremy Renner, who's co-stars, was, I thought, really cast against type, you know, him being typically kind of action guy, or at least a really kind of bravado, confident kind of male lead. He plays a scientist that's her counterpart. I felt like both of their characters, and especially hers, were really well embodied. You know, one thing that struck me about the movie was how, from a filmmaking standpoint, how elegant and efficient it is. Mm. There's really, like I said, not a wasted line, not a wasted shot. And actually moves for how much happens in the movie. It moves pretty quickly. And what's remarkable to me about Amy Adams' performance is that it's not really about any one big monologue or this big sort of, you know, Oscar winning moment where she breaks down in tears or something. It's more just the enfleshment of the character that she kind of carries, the whole backstory that her character has, the whole weight of the moment, and being, you know, a career linguist, what it means to her. It's sort of there in her posture and in her face and her body, as well as in her words the whole time. And I think that's one of the remarkable things about her as an actress. Like you said, you sort of forget she's there because she's sort of somehow, you know, her whole demeanor sort of fits it with exactly, you know, the character that she's portraying in this movie.
What I loved about too was, you know, she was not a technician or a scientist, really. She was a linguist. And, you know, you can take different perspectives when you make a movie about extraterrestrial contact. You know, sometimes they're aggressive and militant, you know, the alien invaders. This was more along the lines they're trying to establish communication. It was fascinating to me. Just all the stuff about language, not only in trying to understand patterns of language, but even how language really does shape the way we see things.
Yeah, you know, I talked to a lot of people about seeing this movie and got a lot of, you know, responses that were mixed interest or not that interested. And a lot of the people that weren't interested, they kept coming back to this idea of, you know, another alien movie, another First Contact movie. And, you know, a few people asked me, do we see the aliens? And there's no spoilers in saying, you, not only do you see the aliens, but you get to see the aliens in about the first 20 minutes of the movie. Mm-hmm. So it's not a movie that's about jump scares or horror or action in that way. It's, like you said, a movie about more elegant and finer things like language. And sure, there's some anxiety-inducing moments. There's some tension. There's plenty of drama. But really what we get to do in this movie is spend a lot of time with Louise Banks as she goes through this emotional and intellectual journey of approaching and really actually building a relationship with a very otherworldly experience and otherworldly beings.
Hmm.
And so that to me was one of the most unique things about the movie. Just that completely different angle into something that's sort of a common trope in sci-fi.
What I love too, you know, from a Catholic perspective, I mean, the word Catholic means universal, and you really do see this universality of human desires, vulnerabilities, you know, all the things that not just across, of course, humans, but even in the extraterrestrials as well. And I think that's a powerful theme in the film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think one of the big themes is otherness. And there's a lot of tension and conflict in the movie that comes from the idea of encountering someone that's other than you. And that's not just humans and aliens. The aliens are sort of wholly other. You know, not quite to the extent the way we talk about, you know, the Trinity as being wholly other, but they are very other. But even the core relationships of the movie, there's this, you know, idea of a military perspective versus a physicist scientific perspective versus the main character's linguistic perspective. And we also have, you know, the drama of these spacecraft have landed in multiple countries. And so these countries are trying to, you know, make their best effort to stay on the same page, some more than others. And so there's this idea of, do we fear the other? Can we encounter the other? Can we gain a common, you know, a common sense of our humanity, a common sense of our being, or even a common language? That I think to me was so fascinating and honestly so timely. I mean, I didn't find the movie to be political in nature, but I will say, you know, we're thinking a lot as a country right now about people who are other. And I thought that this movie was such a great artistic expression of, you know, how difficult that can be, but how important that work is. The work of, like Pope Francis says, you know, culture of encounter.
And what a big, you know, you get that sense in the film, and you kind of touched on this, it's a race against time to make contact before perhaps others who are more suspicious, more defensive, do something rash and endanger the whole project. William, we're going to have to go to a break. When we come back, we are going to set aside any promises of not having spoilers, and we're just going to jump in. Hopefully people who've seen the film will know exactly what we're talking about. But if you don't want spoilers, just fair warning, okay? We'll be right back in just a minute here on the Mike Allen Show.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Welcome back into the Mike Allen Show. We're right at the bottom of the hour here on this Friday, December 9th. My question of the day, what is the best thing about your current age and what is the worst thing about your current age? I got a feeling we could all think of things that we appreciate about where life has brought us and maybe things that are kind of the downside. So if you want to chime in, inspired by this beautiful conversation Pope Emeritus Benedict has in his latest book, his last book, as they say. So you can chime in. Shoot me an email, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com, or post a thought on Facebook or on Twitter. We'll get back here in just a minute to this conversation that I was able to have with William Price. William Price III, who tells stories through film, text, and branding. He's the president of Fortunate Fall Records and Whiskey Ginger Please Incorporated. He has overseen successful crowdfunding, marketing, and art direction campaigns for Audrey Assad, Lev, Army of Me, Marie Miller, and more. This gold Addie-winning director evokes the darkly tinged spirituality of Flannery O'Connor and John Steinbeck, releasing work that dares irreverence and embraces the sometimes brutal tension between beauty and experience. In this spirit, his filmmaking and screenwriting creatively inform his marketing and art direction. William's a husband and father and an avid fan of sport and art. Man, I love that bio he sent my way. It really, you know, it brings a Catholic sensibility. I mean, there's a power in filmmaking, I think, when whether somebody's explicitly Catholic or not, if they see the world with the Catholic imagination, the interconnectivity of things, the sense of mystery and awe and wonder, it's a powerful thing. And I think one of the things, as we'll get back into this conversation I had with William about the film Arrival, I think it's something we both noted in the film, that there is a sense of awe and wonder and so many interweaving themes. You got to see the movie. I really encourage you to see it if you can find a way to get to it. And for this conversation, we are setting aside any promises of no spoilers, because there are some twists and turns and reveals in the film that are important. And so therefore, there will be some reveals in this conversation. So if you don't want to hear that, then definitely don't listen to this portion of the interview. So more in my conversation with William Price III. So, William, thanks for holding on. Let's get back into the film just a little bit. You talked about the other and the implications in the world we're living in right now.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that arguably one of the largest themes of the film is how do we not just communicate but commune with people who are not like us. You know, we have the core team of a general, a physicist, and a linguist trying to work together and balance their common needs or their differing needs with their common goals. You also have the international community. The spaceships have landed, in 12 spots over the kind of across the globe, and then we have the other being the aliens themselves and trying to understand why are they here? Are they here for benevolent or violent, means. And I really felt just so compelled by the ambition of the film in dealing with themes such as that, these global universal themes, but also the very intimate and personal nature of life in the relationship between Louise, the main character, and her daughter. We're introduced very early on to her daughter as someone who has passed away. And so there's this incredible scope of exploration of the human experience. And I would go so far as to say that even inside of Louise's own self, there's a sort of a sense of otherness. She's sort of encountering herself in a new way throughout the movie. That is at times very troubling, I'd love to know, kind of your thoughts on a Catholic reading of the film, because I think there's so much there.
Well, and let's just, like I said, we're going to have a major spoiler here. So if you haven't seen the film and you don't want the spoiler, then you want to fast forward or come back.
the whole, I thought was very interesting, the whole theme of suffering. I mean, this whole dynamic of, you know, what you think at the beginning of the film is her looking, is a looking back or in real time of her daughter who was born and, you know, grows and is diagnosed with some sort of terminal disease and dies very young and the heartache. And then as you get into the film, perhaps little clues that I bet when you see it a second time, there are a lot more there, I would imagine. But you come to understand this whole question, which connects very much so with the idea of language, because these beings, these extraterrestrials, have the ability to, in a sense, see time as a whole as opposed to a linear progression. She, as she learns their language, it begins to affect the way she thinks, and she's able to see, in a sense, the future of her life. And what you come to discover, of course, is this is actually her seeing in the future this child that will be born to her and Ian, played by Jeremy Renner. And the whole question is life worth living even if you know the suffering that is to come? And that's such a profoundly Catholic question, you know, on so many levels. I just thought it was really very beautiful.
Yeah. Well, and if people are hanging around at this point, I really hope they've seen the movie. But what we know, you know, is that not only is that question asked, but sort of at the climax of the film, it actually occurs after the core plot has sort of moved on. You know, we escape the what seems like the core drama of will there be a global and, you know, intergalactic war, and we find ourselves left with this one character who actually now is encountering what really is the core drama, which is the realization that there's a future in front of her that is going to be full of suffering, divorce and being, you know, estranged from her husband, who she's not with yet, and having a child that will die young. And I just thought there were so many Christological moments in the movie. And I'm not someone who reads these kind of things into a lot of movies or books, but there are some real Christological moments. And I thought that Luis was such a Marian figure. Mm. She sort of has this annunciation with the aliens in that she's sort of chosen to receive the message they bring from another world. She is an advocate for peace throughout the movie. And then in the final kind of, like I said, climactic moment, she is put right at the crux of this choice, which is, do I have a child who is born to die, or do I escape the pain? And it's her choice. And she says, yes, it's a fiat. It's absolutely a fiat, you know?
Oh, my gosh, you've just blown my mind, William. I hadn't thought about the Marian dimension. Now you've blown my mind.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely, you know, this yes to life, you know, this yes to her daughter. And you know, the beautiful thing is that if you think about it, and we can sort of think of a heavenly perspective here, if you think about it from a mind that is not tethered to time, I would feel, you know, some people have brought up the idea of, you know, is this movie talking about predestination and will, you know, can you foresee the future and still maintain your free will? But I really felt that it did such a great job of keeping her free to make the choice, because she's able not to just predict the future. She's not, you know, she doesn't have a soothsaying ability. She experiences these moments all as now. And so for her, if you know, in the language of the movie, if she learns the language entirely and is completely freed from the construct of linear time, then all moments can be experienced as a now. And so she's choosing all of the beauty and love of her daughter, knowing that there will be a counterpart of suffering. But it's not that when her daughter dies, she's gone forever and just disappears into the void, and now Luis has to live the rest of her life alone. It's that she's created a new existence of a human person whom she can experience as, you know, her deepest loved one at all times, really. But not without the suffering. And I had a spiritual director one time ask me, if when Jesus was resurrected, did he bear his wounds? And I said, well, yeah, we know that from the Bible. Thomas puts his finger in the wound of Jesus. And he said, so when he ascended into heaven, did the wounds go away? And you have to kind of conjecture here, but there's nothing in the scriptures that would lead us to believe that the Jesus who is bodily in heaven is missing his wounds. And so there's it, that movie, that moment in that movie really entered me into a very deep sacramental idea of that Marian dimension of saying yes to God, knowing that we are, with every new life, we are bringing new joy and goodness into the world and also new suffering. And in the eternal dimension, our great hope as Christians is that all of those things bear value and weight and meaning to them that we would never, you know, say, I wish that this person wasn't in my life, or I wish that, you know, I hadn't lived. That's sort of the heavenly perspective, is that all suffering can be made right and can be made redeemed into something better than as if we, our lives had never happened at all. And it's just not common that you go to the theater for an alien flick and you walk away with that kind of perspective.
We'll have more of this conversation, the last little bit, with William Bryce III about the film Arrival. We'll be back on the other side of the break. This is the Mike Allen Show. You're listening to Breadbox Media.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Ten minutes before the hour, you're back on the Mike Allen Show.
We'll be continuing my conversation here in just a minute with William Price III, talking about the film Arrival, starring Amy Adams and Jeremy Renner, in theaters now. Run, don't walk. Run to go see it. Anyway, rest in peace and pray for the eternal repose of John Herschel Glenn Jr., who passed away yesterday at the age of 95. He was an American aviator, engineer, astronaut, and United States Senator from Ohio, of course, in 1962, became the first American to orbit the Earth, circling it three times. And before joining NASA, he was a distinguished fighter pilot in both World War II and Korea. He was one of the Mercury 7, a group of military test pilots selected in 1959 by NASA to become America's first astronauts. Really makes me want to see the movie The Right Stuff, which I've never watched before, and I think it is on Netflix. At least it was. If not, I need to watch it, because, man, what a life story. My friend Mark, in fact, posted a Facebook status yesterday. He said, NASA, quote, Commander Glenn, we'd like to strap a bomb to your butt and fire you out of the Earth's atmosphere, probably bring you back. Glenn's response, let's go. He says, RIP to a true American badass. Well, yeah, for sure. Anyway, rest in peace, John Glenn, and thanks for the risks and the sacrifices you took for really one of the great, paving the way for, I can't imagine a greater technological achievement than landing a man on the moon. And without your initial pioneering work, John Glenn, it would not have been possible, indeed. Okay, so anyway, we'll get back into this conversation with William Price III, who is a filmmaker and a screenwriter who has a deep appreciation, not so much as a critic, but as a fan of the movie Arrival, which is now out in theaters, starring Amy Adams and Jeremy Renner. It has some connections with the film Contact, which came out about 19 years ago. Basically, the premise of the film was that these 12 alien spacecraft have all planted themselves, parked themselves at various spots throughout the world. And the challenge is how to make contact in a way with persons, you know, with these creatures that do not speak, earthly languages, whatever. And there's this sort of, Amy Adams plays Louise, who is a linguist, and she's in there with the scientist physicist Jeremy Renner, and they're trying to establish contact. And it's sort of a race against time, because there are others in the world who are not reacting with openness, but with defensiveness and with a readiness to show their military might. And so there's a lot of tension in the film, but it is there's so many powerful undercurrents and so many connections with the Catholic faith. And again, spoiler alert, if you've not seen the film, these parts of our conversation may reveal some things that really help the film unfold as you watch it. So just keep that in mind. So more in my conversation with William Price III.
Yeah, to me, the measure of a profound film is when it ends, you're just sitting there in your theater seat and you're just like, you feel like you've just been run over by a truck. You're just like, whoa.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. Your mind just keeps going back to it. And like I said, I mean, you make me want to go see it again. And I definitely want to take my wife to see it because she hasn't seen it. Saw it with a few of my daughters. But we could go on and on. But it's, and I think the aliens, I guess they're, if she's sort of Marian, I guess you have to say they're like the divine, they're like God,
They're certainly at least like angels in that they bear a message to the world, and that message is a message of peace and of glad tidings, but I will say that there's another thing that we didn't talk about, which is Abbott and Castella are the names of the aliens. If everyone here watched the movie, if you remember, but Abbott dies. But what we learned about the aliens is that they can see time clearly. And so you have to roll that back and say, well, Abbott and Castella came to Earth to bring this tool or weapon, this language, so that humans could become universally connected, so that they could develop this language, and so that they could develop their minds into this kind of higher way of living. And Abbott knew going in what would happen. He couldn't not know, but he chose to sacrifice his life. And there's even in that moment, when you go watch it again, you'll notice that, Castella leaves and Abbott stays, and there's a role for Castella that matters after that moment that he needs to be there. So one of them needed to live and one of them needed to make the sacrifice. And what is the consequence of making that sacrifice? It's a more human, more elevated kind of species in the human race, which is kind of how we talk about Jesus.
And it's reconciliation.
He showed us the way. He taught us the language of grace and redemption, and he sacrificed his life for that cause, the cause of salvation and redemption of humanity. And then after his death, he was able to, in his resurrection, communicate with his disciples into how they should now live going forward. I don't think it was written intentionally, but man, it is right there, parallel to the gospel narrative.
Wow. Abbott is death process.
Oh my gosh, you're gonna make me cry.
Yeah. Ugh. Absolutely.
I think of that phrase about once a day, and it just, man, what a great sentence.
Oh man, William, well, thank you so much for taking time, and I'd love to have you on again sometime as a movie fan and obviously a very deep thinker, because you've got me anxious to go see the film again. And
no,
really
I recommend it.
Encourage folks that, if you stuck around and got spoiled, it's still worth seeing. Trust me, it's a great, great movie. So blessings to you and to your family and to your ongoing work.
Oh, thank you very much. Have a great Christmas.
You too. Really enjoyed that conversation. When he started talking about the Marian dimension of the film, I can't believe I hadn't thought about that. Deep thinker, William. And of course, as I said, he married to Audrey Assad, who's been on the program before, Catholic singer, songwriter, also a deep thinker, in the midst of chasing children around. I'm sure they have some pretty profound insights on the things you can kind of see. The Catholic imagination in each of them, which is a great thing. So anyway,
Blessings to William, and go see the film. I mean, honestly, if I can't say it enough, because I want to be able to talk about it with you. And so, sorry and thanks for indulging me on that. Anyway, all right, couple of comments more we got on this question of the day, which is, what do you like best about your current age, and what do you like least? Based on, really inspired by the new book, or the Last Testament, written, a book level interview with Pope Emeritus Benedict XVI, in which he talked about how getting old, like he is 90 now, is older, is harder and easier. Life is. Anyway, David says, at 60, I don't have to work anymore. This is on Facebook. I don't have to work anymore if I don't want to. Good for you, David. I'll probably be handing out stickers at Walmart when I'm 80 because I have to. Anyway, I don't have to work anymore if I don't want to, and I love having grandkids. I love being friends with my adult children without having to wear my mantle of authority anymore. But I used to be able to hit a golf ball. Yeah, let me just say really quick. I agree, David. That is cool. That this whole idea of a friendship with your adult children is really pretty cool. I enjoy that, too. I love being friends with my adult children without having to wear my mantle of authority anymore. But I used to be able to hit a golf ball 300 yards, and now I'm lucky if I can get 240. Sigh. Deborah says, 63, the best thing is retirement and grandkids, the least. I'm 63 and getting older. Yeah, it's funny how that happens. Huh? Anyway, let's spin up the Dolly Catechism wheel. We'll go to random.org, our random number generator, and we'll spin up a number between 1 and 2865. Total number of paragraphs in the Catechism. 1557. See what Providence has in store for us today. Let's see, 1557, almost there. Let's see. Here we go. All right. This is under the section on episcopal ordination, or the ordination of bishops. The Second Vatican Council teaches that the fullness of the sacrament of holy orders is conferred by episcopal consecration. Don't get hung up on episcopal like you were talking about the Episcopal Church. That word simply is a reference to bishops. Episkopos, epi, to over, and then scopos, to see, to scope, right? So that's an overseer or a bishop. That fullness, namely which, both in the liturgical tradition of the church and the language of the fathers of the church, is called the high priesthood, the acme or summa of the sacred ministry. In other words, you know, we have in the Catholic understanding there are three degrees of holy orders, of the ministerial priesthood. You've got the diaconate or the deacon ordination, you've got priestly ordination, and then the fullness of holy orders is the bishop, who is a successor to the apostles, and I don't think I'd ever seen this before, is called the high priesthood, or the acme, summa of the sacred ministry. They are the ones who carry on that apostolic authority and the apostolic service to the church. Pray for our bishops. Pray for them that they will be guided faithfully by the Holy Spirit in their teaching and in making such a radical gift of self, the church may be built up and strengthened. Hope you have a great weekend. Pray for my safe travels. I'll be going to Gatlinburg. Look forward to being back with you next week. God willing, this is the Mike Allen Show, and you have been listening to Breadbox Media.
Listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.